last year was really bad for me cash flow wise. It was one of the actually the worst personal finance years of my life, ironically, just because my business was such a demanding expense and the timing of my contracts was just so unpredictable. So I did that. And I also, for the first time in my life, and this is real money talk and it's super embarrassing, but I opened a 0% APR credit card for the first time in my life for 18 months. And I don't have a big balance on there. I think it's like $2,000. But like today, for example, I needed to order contacts. And earlier this month, I'm a bridesmaid. So I had to get my girlfriend's bridesmaid's dress. And I'm like, I know, right? So like, I know I'm sitting on this huge opportunity right now, but I need a little bit more flexibility. And so right now, like those tools are helping me get there. Of course, you have to make the payments on time or else you lose that great intro rate. So that's great, but it's kind of like, I feel a lot of shame.
Welcome to Michelle is Money Hungry, formerly known as Girl Gone Frugal Again, where I talked about nothing about frugal life. So even though the name was like the cutest thing ever, I had to change it. So now I am recording under Michelle is Money Hungry because, of course, that matches my whole brand. And today I am speaking with a wonderful friend of mine who's so sweet. She is just a rock star New Yorker. A nice New Yorker. There are tons of them, by the way. I love New York. Just saying, don't throw shade over there. We're speaking today with Stephanie O'Connell about the financial reality of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship. And I thought of speaking with her in particular because she's a strong advocate for being transparent about earnings, being transparent about what it really means to be an entrepreneur, and just being an advocate for herself and others to get what they should be paid. So Stephanie, I'm so happy to have you here today. Thank you, even though I kind of made a boo-boo with the time.
No worries. Thank you for the nice introduction.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. I'm boiling water as we speak so we can get some coffee in me so that we can have a coherent and cogent conversation.
That's the real entrepreneurship.
Holy moly. While I'm boiling the water, could you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I am a millennial money author and blogger and writer and persona, if you will.
Persona.
It's hard when people are like, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know. It's just so
much. I made it up and it works.
Sometimes, right? So yeah, I founded my site, StephanieO'Connell.com, really just to be a destination for millennials and especially millennial women who want to feel as confident with their money as they do in the rest of their lives. So that's what I do. And it's a lot of fun.
What does that mean? So someone listening is like, but I still don't understand what you do, but I've seen you on TV.
Exactly. That's why it's so hard to describe, because I do like 10 different things. Okay. So in terms of what is actually income producing.
Oh God.
There's a lot of things that's not income producing.
You're not lying.
But they're essential for getting things that are income producing. So for example, I'm one of those bloggers who like doesn't make money off of her blog almost at all, which is funny because I have a pretty robust business, but my blog itself is not really the center of it. It is the epicenter of like information and resources and tools for my readers. But in terms of what it is for me and how I actually generate revenue, it's not really that. So my blog is really just where you're going to go to find things that are going to be really useful and constructive to you. Like, you know, how do I save more money? Or how do I start a budget? Like all those questions you have when you think about personal finance. But in terms of what actually creates revenue is a stream of things from freelance writing was really the first thing I did to create create revenue from my business. And I don't really do that much of it, but what I do, I focus on really high quality, high paying clients. So those would be clients like big businesses, or I have a few editorial clients. Like I write for Success Magazine.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I write a column for them. And so those are the few gigs I do. And I just, again, kind of write the kind of content that you might see on my blog, or if it's for a corporate client, it might be something for their blog. I also, one of my bigger revenue sources is speeches, which I really started building up in the last year or two. And that is like going out and doing, if in terms of like what might be the most relatable, like a TED talk, except I try to get paid for those things. And
a TED, not really talk, but with money.
And they're usually like an hour long. So it's kind of like motivational and tactical. And that's one of my favorite ways to make money, because I used to be a professional actress. And I feel like when I speak, I'm kind of like marrying the two things I love, which is performing and making money. So that's kind of awesome. And then I also do a lot of brand partnerships. So for example, if I see a brand that kind of serves the same mission that I have, which is like to empower people through personal finance, through financial education, through resources and tools that are actually helpful to their financial lives and not predatory, then I will partner with them if they want to partner with me to do any number of things. So this could be anything from me attending an event and kind of chronicling my experience on social media. It could be me going to give a talk somewhere. It could be me writing a blog post about something that's not like a review of a product. It's more just about some kind of personal financial obstacle or challenge. For example, credit, like maybe some of the mistakes I made with my first credit card could be an example of a campaign. And you would just say, okay, well, this is brought to you by this company, even though the post itself is not like necessarily an endorsement of the company, because I don't really like to do reviews or direct endorsements. I really just like to do things that are more organic and make sense. That's just my personal way of conducting my business. And then I also do videos. So like I do videos for clients, kind of like my freelance writing, except I do it with camera, which is a lot more intensive and a lot more money, but it also pays more. So that makes sense. So I try to think if there's other stuff. I'm actually in my QuickBooks right now so that I can actually see what, like what numbers I'm looking at, like what things are coming from where. Oh, I wrote a book. That's a thing.
Oh, that one thing, The Broke Beautiful Life. Yes. That small little thing that you did.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's and not yes, like I know major, the name.
It's not like a major moneymaker, but I get like, you know, maybe $20 a month, maybe sometimes less, for my book royalties. And while I don't really make money off my blog, I do have like a couple things. Like there's like a cashback portal called Ebates, for example, that I talk about on my site. And I do have an affiliate link for that for readers. So like I have a couple links on my site that are affiliate links. And so I'm looking at my profit and loss statement from last year, and I made a whopping grand total of $2,378 from that. So
hey, it's still $2,000.
Hey, yeah. I'm actually shocked looking at that. And I'm wondering like, are there non-affiliate things included in there? Because I would have guessed my affiliates would have been like $500. Because that's how bad I am. And for those like who aren't super familiar with affiliate marketing, like know that there are people who make like $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month off of affiliate marketing. So I am a wimp when it comes to that.
It's so funny. Actually, you know, I want to focus on something. As you were talking, I was thinking about how bold you have to be in the way that you're creating your business, because a lot of what you talked about, a lot of what you shared in terms of revenue streams are things based on actions from you. So you have to put yourself in front of these companies. What is it like to do that? Like, what is it like to be like, hey, Stephanie, and I do this thing, and I mean, obviously you're not sounding like that. You're sounding like a professional grown adult, but how is it positioning yourself and putting yourself in front of these businesses and being bold. What is that like for you? And what kind of advice would you give to people, to women, men, whomever listening to this show, who are like, I had never considered that with my little blog or podcast or whatever it is that I'm doing, that I could just reach out to people?
Yeah. So two things. The first is I am pretty shameless about self-promotion because I was an actress. So I have very little problem with the idea of rejection. And I know that's a really big barrier for people. But for me, like my entire 20s was going into about 5 rooms a day to be rejected. So
sorry. It's true. So that's for not me, bad. You know. Hi, my name is Steffi. No.
Yeah, bye. Yeah, or thank you, and then I'll never hear from you again.
But bye, Felicia.
Exactly. That was my reality. And like, and you don't take it personally because it's just part of the process, because you have to go through the 100 no's to get the yes. And I was, you know, I worked as an actor. Like I was employed frequently. So like, if I was like a quote unquote successful actor and I still dealt with that much rejection, then I know that that's part of the process. I get it. And I assume that to be the case with anything I do. You know, I've been rejected for like 5 TED Talks. I've been rejected for countless campaigns. You know, I get rejected all the time. It's just that like, that's what it takes to get to the yes. So that's the first thing. And I know it's a lot easier said than done. I know it can be painful. I know it hurts. And I'm not going to say it never hurts for me. Like when I get down to the wire on something, yeah, it hurts when I don't get it. But most of the time I'm just like, okay, what do I do next? And that's the focus, as opposed to, I didn't get it. Shoot. What now? So that's one. And then the second one is like I said before, like brand representation and speaking are my two biggest income streams. And a lot of people ask me about them, and it's because they pay a lot of money and they're good ways to make money. The tricky part is with those two things, they tend to be lagging indicators of a success. So what I mean by that is they are typically something where people approach you as opposed to you approaching them. And the way to get people to approach you is really by creating a kind of authority and expertise for yourself in addressing a certain market and a certain topic. So for me, it's obviously millennials, and it's obviously money, and specifically when we're talking about women, and specifically in big cities. So I've created a hub of content, from blog posts to video to a book about that topic. And so it makes it much easier when a company is like, oh, we want to target millennials for a campaign in big cities. Who should we talk to? Well, then there's only a list of, you know, maybe 50 people. And then from there, it narrows down pretty quickly when they're looking for certain attributes. So if they want someone who lives in New York City, all right, now we're down to 10 people, you know? And so by making those things that you are a very clear part of your brand, like I'm a New York City former starving artist, millennial woman, like there's only really like maybe one or two of me in terms of that level of specificity. And I think some of us tend to shy away from being that specific because we think that it limits us, but it's actually what makes us become attractive for these kinds of opportunities. So that's really important. That said, I will say that there is a lot of value in terms of not necessarily, you know, pitching the brands with an idea, but creating a relationship with brands. So I make a point to go to events and conferences and meetups and whatever I can in person, because I know that's where I shine. I know that that the inbox is a crazy place for everyone. And I know if your inbox is probably like this too. And I'm like, I'm sorry, my bandwidth is too full. Exactly. But if I connect with somebody in person, it's a completely different relationship. And I know that's true for producers. I know it's true for brands. I know that's true for editors, et cetera. So I do think there's a lot of value in living in a large city where you are at the hub of a lot of events. I do think there's a lot of value in going to events where you are going to get to connect with these kinds of brands and decision makers in person. That said, like that's only part of the process. You still have to have that clear brand identity in place before you actually like show up in person and meet these people. And like I said, it's not like a pitch. It's just like, hi, I'm Stephanie. This is what I'm about. What are you about? And kind of getting in touch with what they're working on and what their needs are, rather than like being super aggressive about, do you want to work on a video together? Do you want to do a talk? Like, I think there's a lot of people who aren't playing the long game in building right. these relationships. You know, I've known some of these brands for 5 years and we've never partnered together. That's not to say we never will, but you know, that's kind of how I approach it. And that's not to say I'm not aggressive. I am aggressive, but I'm aggressive about building the relationship, not necessarily, you know, closing the contract. When it comes time to that, sure, I'll negotiate with you, but we got to get there first.
You know, it's really interesting that you mentioned this, because what I now do in terms of coaching and kind of the focus that I'm focusing on in terms of what I help people with is networking. And basically, my goal is to really help people connect with more money via their networks. And what you just talked about is kind of at the heart of what I'm trying to get people to understand. Those like very, how would I say it? You know, when you go to those really boring networking meetups and you're just like, oh my God, this is horrible. This is like the worst thing ever, versus going to a happy hour or a meetup or like skiing with,
yeah,
like the brand has some kind of event and you're like, I'm going to tag along. Right. And it's funny because people really are very impatient about the ask. And I'm like, you have to build your network and the relationship with the people that you hope to work with in the future, because you have to build the know, like, and trust. You have to show them that you're consistent. You have to show them that you're going to do what you say.
100%. Like, also remember, like in the influencer space that we're kind of all in, they're working with you as a person, right? So for example, I'm in negotiations right now for a contract that would be a year long. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So, it's not signed. So
I know, but I'm really excited.
Keep your fingers crossed.
I just got so excited.
But like, think about that. Like, you are going to be working with somebody for a year of their life. Like, they have to like you as a person. So one of the things, and you have to like them as a person too. So that's one thing to be aware of also. You know, yeah. You're dating each other when you're getting to know one another. So one of the things I'm always really conscious of is really, like you said, getting to know the people, not just who they work for. You know, so I know, you know, somebody at one company, I know what her life is. When I see her, I ask, you know, how it's going with her kids, how it's going with her new apartment, all those things, because it's important. Like, I do care on a personal level, but also it's important for building our relationship professionally too, that we are connected personally, because this is a persona business. It's about who you are in totality, not just your business.
I really love how this conversation is kind of coming together, because I think that a lot of people feel very reticent about getting to know people on a personal level. I think that a lot of things are very on the surface nowadays, to be honest. So here's an example. Yesterday I met a relationship coach like randomly at my co-working space. Mm-hmm. This guy was so nice. He's very nice, but his personality is a little rigid for me, but he did make me laugh though. So I thought this guy's a really funny guy. But it was really interesting because the way that he was talking about, and he does this online, he's an online content creator and growing a pretty big brand online. But I was kind of struck by I felt like he was not as relationship focused, actually, in terms of how he was connecting with the people that he wanted to serve. It surprised me. And it came up because he said, I don't want my people on other people's lists. And I said, well, it doesn't matter if they're on other people's lists. You just need them to be on your list. Like I'm very abundance mindset focused. And when I'm networking with people, when I'm connecting with people, my thought is there's an endless amount of opportunities, but those opportunities aren't really going to present themselves if I'm kind of boxed off to knowing who these people are. Right?
I totally agree. Yeah.
It's like people
miss having people care genuinely about what's going on with them. You know, when people ask, how are you doing? And then and you're like, oh, yeah, fine. And then you keep going. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't really get into it. If I ask how you're doing, I'm asking how you're doing because I really want the answer. So I will call people out if they're like, yeah, I'm good. I'm like, no, you're not. Like, that is not a yeah, I'm good answer. And so I think really building rapport and like an emotional connection with people, it doesn't mean that you're doing a Vulcan mind meld Trekkies. It just means that you actually, if you're going to put the energy into meeting people, that you actually kind of care.
I would also elaborate on that point you made about this idea of a non-abundance mindset. What is that? What's the opposite of abundance? Like zero-sum game mindset? Mm-hmm. I would say some of my best opportunities have come from my closest competitors. And that's because I treat my relationship with them like I would a best friend. And that's how it actually has evolved. Like the people who are most similar to me in my business are some of my best friends in my business. And they have been some of my best referrals for the opportunities I've had. And I try to be that for them. And like you said, there is more than enough opportunity to go around. And if you are cutting people out who are similar to you, then you are missing out. You are not gaining anything by trying to be competitive with them. You should collaborate with them.
For a person who's like pushing back on that notion, what would you say?
That's not to say that like there isn't still limited opportunities for some things. Like for example, the gig I'm like up for right now is something that last year they interviewed 5 or 6 people for, likely some of whom are my friends, and they only had room for the one, right?
Right.
But like, that's just one gig, you know, and by nature of working with brands and publications, you have exclusivity, right? So if I sign a contract with this brand, I can't work with any other brand in that space for the next year. So that means that I'm out of the running for all these other brands. So if one of those brands contacts me, I can say, listen, I'm on contract, but I can still be valuable to them and my friends by offering my friends as the next step to go to. Right? So this has happened to me with media a lot. For example, one of my closest friends and also most similar to me is always on television, and sometimes she can't go. And even this week I wound up doing CBS because she was like, oh, I have a last minute conflict. You should call Stephanie O'Connell. And I went on and I did the segment. So I just see again and again how it is true that collaboration serves me. And I think it serves me way more than it harms me.
I want to focus on getting in front of opportunities and pitching and getting in front of brands. And I don't want to get into hard numbers, but I want you to share kind of what that looks like. Is this a daily thing? We have a mutual friend, Holly Johnson, who is just killing it in the freelancing space as well as blogging. And one of the things I noticed last year, I was rebranding last year. And I was spending a lot of time looking at what a lot of people were doing. And one of the things I noticed Holly doing, which I found very intriguing, was she still pitches quite a bit. And I was surprised to notice that. But do you pitch a lot, or I feel like you put yourself in front of opportunities a lot.
What does
this look like?
So what I try to do is if I see something happening in the market, for example, last year I saw there was this push into video. And so what I started doing was creating a few high quality, expensive, but high quality videos, but that I saw, like that I imagined a brand would use on their website, even though they weren't really doing it yet. And I swear to you, within like a month, I had a brand reach out to me being like, wow, would you make one of these kinds of videos for us? And then I wound up doing like 6 videos for them, and it was a 5-figure contract. So it's like, I don't necessarily pitch like kind of out of the blue stuff. I just try to be a little bit anticipatory of what I think the needs are going to be for the brand. And sometimes I'm too early. Sometimes, like, I remember meeting with a bank, like, at FinCon 3 years ago, and they were like, you know, we're not really focusing on millennials right now. And I was like, that's stupid. but then the next year they were like, actually, we're so glad we saw you because this is like our main focus. And I'm like, okay, so sometimes the timing is off. But yeah, that's kind of how I operate. I know what you're talking about with Holly, that like I'm going to be totally honest. I don't have that kind of work ethic. I honestly don't like.
She's Holly a machine.
Is a machine. She's amazing. Okay. And she deserves every penny that she earns. That woman writes like a machine. And like, I have no interest in working like that. And I think this is like a really important thing to ask yourself as you're thinking, how am I going to grow and scale my business? Like, I remember when I was freelance writing, it was like, okay, I finally started getting paid a lot, but like, even if you're making $300, $400, or $500 a post, you got to be cranking out tens of thousands of words every month to be making a living. And I just had no interest in that. I like, it's not what made what lit my fire. And that's right. Obviously not true for Holly, but it was true for me. So that is like what made me totally rethink my business and try to pivot into different formats like video and influencer marketing and brand sponsorships. So I think that's a really important thing for people to consider is like, what do you actually want your work, like what do you want your revenue sources to look like for you in terms of like what it takes to do that? Like, do you want to write 6 articles a day? If you are a quick writer, then maybe you do. Maybe that's fine. And it's a really good way to start earning revenue to start. It's just like, do you want to do that? Remember, we're like, this is a young career path. Nobody knows what it looks like to be a blogger for the next 40 years. So do you want to do that for 40 years? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Like, that's something to consider. For me, it wasn't. So I had to think about something that was maybe more sustainable for someone else. Like, I think we've spoken about, like, you want to do something that's like more passive, like more affiliate income. Right. And I definitely want to do that too. But in the meantime, I want to make $250,000. So I got to get there. I got to get there first.
That is a good segue into the next kind of round of questions, if you will. I want to talk money, like really talk about money, cash flow, and so part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you, we've recorded a podcast before when I was still learning how to podcast. This time I actually know what I'm doing. And we had a conversation, I feel like it was at FinCon after I met like 8 billion people. And you kind of said something in passing that really made me think. And I felt like it's not talked about enough, where people are doing these amazing things as online content creators, as influencers, if you will. And they're getting big contracts. They have all these things, all these irons in the fire. They're creating stuff. Stuff is happening. Money is happening. But then you have moments when the money does not arrive.
Yeah.
Okay. And I want you to share, one, how that can happen, and two, how you're kind of combating that going into 2018 so that cash flow is very steady. It's not one of those things where you're like, I've got this 6-figure contract and basically I'm going to have to be a brand ambassador until that money comes in.
Yeah. That's you know what I mean? Oh gosh.
So let's talk reality here.
Okay. So the reality is exactly what you're saying. It is extremely, extremely challenging when you start to scale in the brand and the speaking, because what happens is your contracts get really huge, so you don't need as many of them, but that also means you don't have as many paydays. So let's say you're working on $20,000 contracts. Even if you have a 6-figure business, you might only get paid 5 times a year. And that would be all well and good if you knew when those dates were going to come, when those checks were going to come. But like, it will never happen when you think it's going to happen. I know we have these contracts. I know like we're all trying to plan. Like, I write about personal finance for a living, for God's sake, but like it still doesn't happen the way you think it's going to happen. So I will freely admit this is still a learning curve for me. It's been extremely, extremely difficult. And basically everyone I speak to about it agrees. So it's nice to know I'm not alone. And so for anyone who's listening and thinking about this, you would not be alone either. So for example, last year I was in talks with a company and they agreed to move forward with me in January. I didn't get a signed contract till March.
Whoa.
I didn't do my first engagement till June, and I didn't get my first payment until September.
Whoa.
So I think that's just an idea of what kind of timeline these kinds of things operate on. That's a 9-month timeline to the first check. And when I first got the contract, when I first signed it, when I was first offered it rather, like I thought I'd be getting checks maybe by June, right? So I was padding. Like I was giving the leeway there, like in my own brain, because I am a business, like I am a person. I still have to operate on cash flow somehow and I have to project. And I was doing my most conservative projection with a first payment in June and I didn't get it till September. So it's like, it's so much worse than you're going to anticipate, like in terms of timing and cash flow. So what I have done to kind of mitigate some of that is this year, I started a new process, which is really getting clear about how much I must uncompromisingly make on a monthly basis. And the reason I kind of started this process is because I have a tendency to invest a lot of money back into my business. Right. And because of the way the cash flow works, like I said, I thought it was going to be 6 months, it was 9 months, and that happens with client after client. I will make investments under the assumption of money coming in, which I understand is not always the best idea, but is sometimes a necessary factor of running a business. And then the money doesn't come for another 3 months. So it's created a really bad situation for me. And so in 2018, what I started doing is anytime I want to spend money in my business or my life, I write down, I track everything I spend. And then I have to ask myself if I am willing to commit to making that much plus taxes for the month. So you know how I said before, like I have no interest in doing like what Holly's doing with her freelance writing.
Right.
That said, if I want to buy a $500 course, I now have to ask myself, okay, Stephanie, are you going to find 2 freelance writing gigs that are going to cover that cost for you for this month? So like it's like being really concrete with myself about what the real numbers on the ground are and what that means for me in terms of how much business I need to solicit, especially in terms of business that I know, I'm going to get paid right away. Like, for example, I write on a platform called Contently and I get paid immediately as soon as I submit a draft for them. So like, while I don't love freelance writing, I love that as soon as I
you and I yes. are so alike. It's so funny. I like to write. I just don't like that part of that as a right. big revenue stream.
Exactly.
It's just one of those things.
Exactly. And I feel like this system that I've built is like, okay, well, I did get, you know, a big check from a campaign I did last year, earlier this month. So like, I already have that as a base revenue, but I built a landing page for my course this month and that cost a lot of more money than I thought because we had to make all these adjustments and there was like this hourly thing. And I'm like, okay, well that means I need to get 4 more Contently gigs. Okay. Mm. So like, that's kind of how I'm operating to try to be a little bit more grounded with my money this year. So I don't wind up in a place where like, well, next month I'll get this check and I'll even it out, because I have found that that's really not a sustainable model. And I need to be more proactive and directive with my earnings than just like, okay, well, I know I'm about to sign a 6-figure contract, so it'll all work itself out. Because like, what if it doesn't, right? Like, and even if the contract is signed, like I know now, I don't believe it until I have the money in my hand. And I think that's the way, yeah, like we all need to operate
our business
that way. Like, don't assume anything until you have the money in your bank account.
I have a question, and you don't have to answer this question, but okay. I am curious because I'm sure some of the listeners are wondering, during those times when you're waiting 3 additional months for that revenue to come in, how did you live? What was happening?
So I have depleted ashamedly a lot of my emergency fund. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I am now having to rebuild. Last year was really bad for me cash flow wise. It was one of the worst personal finance years of my life, ironically, just because my business was such a demanding expense and the timing of my contracts was just so unpredictable. So I did that. And I also, for the first time in my life, and this is real money talk and it's super embarrassing, but I opened a 0% APR credit card for the first time in my life for 18 months. And I don't have a big balance on there. I think it's like $2,000. But like today, for example, I needed to order contacts. And earlier this month, I'm a bridesmaid. So I had to get my girlfriend's bridesmaid's dress. And I'm like, I know, right? So like, I know I'm sitting on this huge opportunity right now, but I need a little bit more flexibility. And so right now, like those tools are helping me get there. Of course, you have to make the payments on time or else you lose that great intro rate. So that's great. But it's kind of like, I feel a lot of shame that I actually had to rely on that kind of product in order to create this flexibility. But then I try to cut myself some slack because I'm like, okay, I'm a business that has always operated in the black. Like most businesses operate in the red for years. And my business is still profitable. It's just like, it's harder sometimes than others. And I think the crazy thing is, it's like you get through the first 3 years and you're like, oh yeah, I'm on it. And then like you can have this year that comes out of nowhere and hits you in the face. And that happens. And like, I've spoken to a lot of other business owners about it and they're like, yeah, it totally happens. Like you're not in the clear when you have like your first like major milestone year, you know? So it's a learning curve and it's in progress always.
What does 2018 have in store for you? We're wrapping up, people, and I'm really curious to see, besides this huge contract, which I believe you're going to get, because of course I'm biased, but what are you hoping to have happen this year in terms of revenue, in terms of visibility? What are you working towards?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I started the year, like I went on vacation and then I got really sick. So like, I'm like a little bit delayed for my 2018, but I've been thinking about it recently. Cause I've been like putting together my content calendar and, you know, obviously I want to make a lot of money and, I want to do it in a way that I really enjoy. So like, obviously if I get this brand deal, I'll have a base of like exactly what I want, like doing the kind of gigs I want for the right kind of money I want, like it'll be perfect. But beyond that, like, one of my favorite things in my business is my following, my readers, and I get these notes from them sometimes about like things they did or breakthroughs they had, or even just like a different feeling that they have about approaching their money. And so like, one of my biggest goals is just to build that community, not just the size of it, but also like the impact and community aspect of it, so that like I don't need to be so central to it, so that it's not a one-way dialogue of me just putting out content and like hearing back from people, but rather that people are talking to each other and supporting each other and that they are their own resources. And it kind of like takes some of the burden off of me to constantly provide content, but I'm still like creating this like huge, impactful and meaningful community.
Oh, so if people want to hear from you, how do they find you?
I am at StephanieO'Connell.com and I spell my name with an F, not a PH. So if you're looking on Instagram or Twitter or YouTube or Google, it's Stephanie with an F, O'Connell, and I will see you around the interwebs.
The interwebs.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. I believe that 2018 is going to be a banner year for you, and I just appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.